I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England.
The devil's advocates. Because freedom.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. I got a quick news update. The recently Trump-endorsed Republican gubernatorial candidate, Tim Michaels, apparently he has been allowed on the ballot. So, you know, we got that to look forward to. Also, we got a fine guest. He's joined live via Zoom. He is retired Brigadier General Jerome Jones. Jerome, you asked me to call you Jerome, sir. It seems a little too informal. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. And first, let me say that we're not for thousands, hundreds, if not thousands, of E4s, E2s, E1s, E7s. I wouldn't be a general. So as you well know, the heart of any service runs on its NCOs. And so it's my honor to know you and pleasure to chat with you.
Well, I was one of those, I guess I didn't start as a buck private. I had a couple of years of college, so I didn't start as a E0 or whatever. I think I was an E2, E3. But I had the opportunity. I enlisted and served during the first Persian Gulf War, and it ended relatively quickly, sir. And I found my duty. I was a 91 Bravo combat medic, and I found my duty was entirely stateside. My unit didn't get sent, so I didn't get sent. But you were part of Colin Powell's staff during that first Persian Gulf War. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, that's correct. I was in charge of an organization who was in charge of national military strategy, among other things, and got involved in the strategic planning for the conflict, the first Gulf War, which I still think was a decent war done with for the right reasons and carried out in the right way. But it was an honor to work for Colin Powell. It was certainly one of the highlights of my 29 years in the Air Force. Terrific guy, and it's too bad that he has gone on, but what a great man he was.
Well, Jerome, a mutual friend, or at least a friend of mine, introduced me to you. And the topic that we're going to talk about, or at least we'll get to it now, the January 6th hearing, sir. And, you know, I noted in something you emailed, I'm going to quote you to you, sir. I swore to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Never imagined that the domestic threat would be the greatest threat to our republic in my lifetime. But here we are. Indeed, Jerome, here we are.
Yes, and I'm referring back to the Cold War, where at the heart of the Cold War, I was an FB-111 pilot, and I sat on alert in the middle of the cold winters in Plattsburgh, New York, with six hydrogen bombs strapped to my butt, ready to do damage to the Soviet Union. But I never thought we would have to do that, because the Russians, or the Soviets, I should say, at least were rational people. And we pretty much all agreed on what the facts were. They had 25,000 nuclear weapons. We had 25,000 nuclear weapons. It would be stupid for either side to use those. But with the current Republican Party, particularly with the Trump part of that party, whatever it is, I don't know how we deal with them, because they're not rational, and they don't agree on any facts that I am aware of, that certainly that I agree with.
Now, there was a lot of contention, and I watched some of the Fox News coverage after the fact, and they continuously say, well, the intelligence existed. They knew the something bad could be coming down the pike. Why didn't the military act with more vigor? And we'll obviously see more evidence as these January 6th hearings come down, but it is my understanding it was the vice president trying to direct a response. And it was the White House that very much was politicizing the response. Obviously, they might have been differently motivated, sir.
Yeah, and I had known that Vice President Pence made that phone call, I guess, after he had spent 4 years with his nose solidly up the keister of the president, he decided to grow a spine. But let's give him credit for that. It sort of interested me, because I'm very familiar with the National Security Act of 1947, amended in 1984, and again added to in 1988 with the Goldwater-Nichols Act, how that lines up with what the national command authorities are. And that means, how do orders in fact get passed down? My understanding of, unless it's changed, is they go from the president to the Secretary of Defense. The vice president is not in that chain necessarily. You know, if the president were not available to do that, the vice president could, before the vice president, to make that unprecedented call, and for General Milley to accept those orders, I found astonishing. I'm very happy they did. I think General Milley had made the decision that Trump wasn't stable, and he had in fact talked to his Chinese counterpart, perhaps his Russian counterpart, to let them know that there would be no nuclear action, no military action, particularly nuclear action, at the command of this president while he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So I found that an extraordinary thing that Trump would completely abandon his oath of office. He's the commander-in-chief of all the armed forces. It was only he or the president's office who could in fact initiate the National Guard, and he failed to do that. And thank goodness that Vice President Pence did have the courage in that moment to make that decision. But I was astonished by that whole series of events that had the vice president making that call.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest. He is retired Brigadier General Jerome Jones. He joins us live via Zoom, and we've been talking about the January 6th. A digression, sir, but the testimony of the, pardon me, the Capitol Police officer, the Edwards, and she put sort of a human face on what was happening outside the Capitol. And maybe it's secondary to the greater coup plot, as I would describe it. But the carnage, she described it like hand-to-hand combat for hours. Sir, I don't think many people have experienced exactly what that's like. The videotape, I think it was chilling. I think it had to move some people if they hadn't been exposed prior. What was your impression of what was happening outside the Capitol that day?
A couple of things. First of all, enormous courage by those Capitol Police. And I have to say, serving 4 years in the Washington area, I probably had a view of both the Pentagon civilian police force and the Capitol Police force as people who may not answer the call when the call came, but she did. And she did in spades, and they did. And they fought courageously. And it was a battle for which they're not trained for. She said, we're trained to handle crowds and to tell people not to do things and pick up papers and those kind of things. But they fought hand-to-hand combat for a long time. And Crude, one of the things that was surprised me that I didn't realize is the timeline when the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers first do a reconnaissance around the Capitol, decide where the weak points are, and begin to enter the Capitol. It's only after they have begun that process that the president goes down to the ellipse, fires up the crowd, sends them down to the Capitol. He says he's going to lead them, but of course, Trump is a coward, if nothing else. And so there was no way he was going to lead them down there, because I believe that Trump knew there was going to be violence. In fact, he intended for there to be violence. And so I was just amazed at the Capitol Police, and really have a great respect for them. I have no respect for their leadership. I don't know who was leading them at that time, who was in charge, but they were doing a fairly terrible job. As I looked around, I kept looking, so where are the sergeants? Where are the captains and the colonels? Nowhere to be found. Those policemen and women were out there right by themselves and put their lives in danger and gave us enough time probably to save at least Pelosi's life, if not Trump.
Jerome, how troubling is it to you, sir, that so many of these Proud Boys, so many of these Oath Keepers are former military? And you can see the videotape, the stack formations, the different things that you would do in a war zone. You would go and do reconnaissance. You would find the weak perimeter. You would go and do flanking. It seemed as if there were multiple formations that were attacking these weak points and creating different, almost like a pincer move. So It very much seemed like these guys were using their former military training for malfeasance. How troubling is that, sir?
It's very troubling. I think if you have an appreciation from where we recruit these fine young men and women like yourself, they come primarily from the South, from places like West Virginia, from the Midwest, and so they tend to grow up in conservative environments. And so they tend to be, like most of the country that grew up in those areas, they tend to be conservative. And so sadly, they can be drawn to something like the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys. And who knows what success they had in the military. They could be frustrated. I have to say that with my FB-111 reunions, which occur about every 2 or 3 years, the FB-111 was a very elite aircraft. All the officers had college degrees, most of them graduate degrees. When I went to my last reunion, and it will be my last one, I suspect, I found most of them were Trump supporters. And I was appalled by that. I will never quite understand that. People who have dedicated their lives to preserving the country and observing this oath and meeting out all sorts of harsh punishment on people like E4s who do the things that can be considered almost minor, how they then can support someone like Donald Trump. I have no answer for that question. It's disappointing.
And this is just theoretical. I'm just thinking quickly. You tell me how far off I am. But you talked earlier about the chain of command. The military has a very definitive, you go ask your boss who asks his boss who asks his boss. Well, it's almost patriarchal. And I think there has been sort of a blending. A lot of the people that weren't part of the Oath Keepers and whatever in that crowd, that mob, there was still a lot of white nationalism. There were still a lot of outside forces in that group. There were a lot of people that came knowing that something was amiss, even if they didn't have the clear vision of what the plan was. How scary is this for the future of our nation, sir, if we have these sort of fomenting groups? They go meet at this January 6th. Some are serving time in a D.C. jail together, but the bonds are growing stronger. The alliances are getting stronger right now.
Well, it's very frightening. You know, you hesitate to use the term fascism these days or talk about a fascist movement, but you have to say that the idea of a strong leader with a virulent nationalism, a white supremacy, those things we've all seen in our world before, and they're represented by many of the people that were on the grounds that day that attacked the Capitol. And it is very frightening to me to think that that many Americans of all educational levels, all economic levels, thought that the right thing to do was attack the Capitol and stop an election. And one of the things I loved about the presentation last night, particularly from Congresswoman Cheney, and I worked with her father closely for 2 years, but she laid it out very clearly. Donald Trump led that. He organized it, and it was his responsibility. He gathered the crowd together, had them march down to the Capitol. He was responsible for that. She made that loud and clear. And so I hope that comes through, and I hope that has some sort of mitigating influence on people who are beginning to think like that, that white supremacy, that this virulent nationalism is un-American. And of course, the president carried out so many unconstitutional and illegal things that day. I hope they find a way to indict him. My guess is they're going to. I thought it was so many things that were important. One of the things that I had not realized, apparently in her Congressman Cheney's words, multiple congressmen had gone to ask for pardons. I find that shocking. I'd like to know who those were. May get them elected this days in America. That might be a badge of honor.
Jerome, before we run out of time, just a couple minutes left. There has been reporting that it was considered martial law, using the military to seize the voting boxes, perhaps forcing re-elections or whatever their scheme was. If the president had ordered it and it came down the chain of command, do you have any doubt that the E2s, the E4s, the grunts like me would have been out there in the field doing whatever our boss told us to do?
I have no doubt that Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff would have not carried forth with that order. He had already told the Chinese and had told the Russians, I think the Russians, I'm not clear about that, but his Chinese counterpart, that he would not carry out an order from the president to do any kind of attack on them. So that order would not have been carried down. It could have only come through the National Guard. And again, he would have had to nationalize the National Guard. I don't think it would have been possible for the military to do that. Had they done that, I would have been one of the most disappointed and disillusioned people in America.
Well, you know, I keep threatening to move to Canada, sir. Hopefully that will not be a necessity. Retired Brigadier General Jerome Jones, very nice to meet you. So glad you joined us here on the Devil's Advocates.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We'll come back. More Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open. 844-967-2789.
For my military knowledge, the right flanking and the dentury has only been brought down to the beginning of the century, but still a matter of vegetable, edible, and mineral. I'm the very bottle of the body, very general.